All right, let's rock and roll. And so now's when we're getting into sex. Yeah. Woo! Yeah, one of the best things about that in the book is there's always that pause when you're reading it, like in a group. You know, wrap up fears is like a pause and now about sex, you know? And so yeah, let's get into it. It's the bottom of 68. Much of it is on page 69. You know what? I don't have a lot of time left, but I will do the confused sponsee. Has anyone heard the joke about the confused sponsee? So there's this confused sponsee who sees the newcomer with the, you know, blue eyes and blue grippy socks, and you know, they're a newcomer themselves, and they go to their sponsor, like a good sponsee, and they're like, I'm ready for true love. And the sponsor's like, oh, dear Lord, you know, because as we do. And the sponsor says to the sponsee, okay, what I want you to do is, could at the very least, could you have a read on the thing where it talks about relationships in the big book, like sex? Could you read that? And the good sponsee's like, absolutely, I will. Okie dokie, sponsor, absolutely. Sponsor says, it's on page 69. Sponsor says, I got it. 69, won't forget, I remember. So sponsor goes home. All right, real excited, the blue eyes, blue slippers, woo, you know, like really in on it. What page was that again? 96. It was 96. So, all right, so this is what my sponsor wants me to do in terms of relationships, top of 96. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness with what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. Now, some of you might wonder about how I sponsor. I like to go with my sponsees through the book line by line so we don't have that confusion. You know what I mean? So bottom at 68, it says, now about sex, many of us needed an overhauling there. So if I look at this area of my life, and this is an area of my life that needs an overhaul, I am not alone. See, anything that I see in this book is meant for people like us. And if this is my experience, I mean, they didn't write this for no reason. They didn't have a whole section on what to do if you really enjoy the Ferris wheel too much at the fair. You know what I mean? Hey, welcome. Come on in. We're just talking about you. Oh, and so if I can relate to anything that is in this book, what that means is that is a common predicament for alcoholics. And I love this. This is a book that was published in 1939, and it is so sane and so reasonable on this area. I mean, that's one of those reasons I know this is a God-given textbook. It says, above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity for procreation. It is bad, think of baseball, and don't enjoy it. That's what it said. Oh, you guys have the Blue Jays, so you might act, never mind, I was going to let you probably have baseball to enjoy. Focus. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, woo! Who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we don't have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. Also, if you're needing a drag name or a burlesque name, what I'll just say very randomly is, welcome to the stage, our next performer, the not-so-straight Miss Pepper Diets. I don't know why you'd need that, but you have that. You're welcome. So what it's saying is we got these two extremes, and we veer from extreme to extreme. And so it says, we want to stay out of this controversy. Did you ever know an alcoholic who wanted to stay out of controversy? Like, I mean, there's God right through that, right? It says, we do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We're not here to tell you what to do. And I love this. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. Not we'd hardly be alcoholic, but we would hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? So we reviewed our own conduct over the years past, And this is where we're going to get the sex columns from. Now, I want you to know, as I go through this whole process of inventory, my inventory might look different than your inventory. Or I might tell you to do something your sponsor doesn't tell you to do. Don't listen to me. That's cool. I mean, you can do it this way if you want. And if you're like, that's wrong, that's cool. Do it wrong. You know, it's cool. Do it wrong. I'm wrong. You're right. But try it. You know, try inventory this way. See what happens. So they see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other... Oh, sorry, I'm way off the beam. I'm like way back there. I'm like, woo! I definitely don't have ADHD. So we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. And in that next paragraph, it says, in this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? Then it says, we asked. Anytime it says in this book, we asked, that is a prayer. We ask God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. If you're thinking of starting an Alcoholics Anonymous metal band, welcome to the stage, Sex Powers! Woo, yeah! I don't know why I'm like this. I actually, a little bit, I mean, I've done a lot of inventory. Clearly, I need it. All right. And so here's how I have formatted and how I was taught to format the sex columns. We're going to use these same four columns. In column one, we're going to put the name. Now, keep in mind, it says, were we selfish or not? Because often, I won't say always with sponsees, but usually there's like, but what if we were both selfish? What if we were both being selfish? Then we were selfish, let's write it down, right? Was it selfish or not? Write it down. And I have hurt people with my sex conduct that I might not have had that sort of connection with. Like if I was engaged with someone who was in a relationship, I might have hurt their partner, and I can put their name down too. And what, again, I don't self-edit. I write it down. And then in column two, I look at where was I at fault. Now, I don't know about you, but I had a couple of my exes on my resentments list. Like all of them on my resentments list. Okay, you're all just well-adjusted and get along after. Okay, but I did. And you know what I saw in that fourth column? I saw where I was at fault. In that fourth column, it flows right into here. Where was I at fault? Where I had been wrong. See, that's that thing I said about column two and resentments. That's the last time we got to call anyone any name. So let's use it. Like, we're not looking at what they did anymore. We're now just looking at us. And then we look at where was I selfish, where was I dishonest, and where was I inconsiderate? Not was I, but where was I? And then did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? And I can do this in myself or another person. I'm sure you're all well-adjusted and have no idea what it's like to just create jealousy within yourself for no reason, right? And searching their phones and all that sort of stuff. But I can also, thank you for laughing. But I can also create jealousy again if I'm engaged with somebody who's in a relationship, that other person. And if they were to find out, would they feel jealous, suspicion, or bitter? Whether they knew or not, how would they feel, right? And I want to get that all down on paper and look at it. And then what I want to do is I want to pray. God, I ask you to mold my ideals and help me to live up to them. And the reason, why the heck are we looking at sex? You know what I mean? Like, well, I don't want to talk about this. I don't look at this. Why am I looking at this? Because this is the area of my life that I have the most secrets. This is the area of my life where I have the most guilt and I have the most shame. And this is the area of my life that cuts me off from God like nothing else. I have the ability to harm people at a level that I don't harm people in other areas. I need to get free. And this is an area where we have a lot of trouble. Not because we're alcoholic, because we're human beings. All pepper, no pepper, doesn't matter. We have a lot of trouble. And so the purpose, the sole purpose of me looking at this, of course, is to get some information for my amends that I'm going to make, but to come up with a sane, sound sex ideal. An ideal for my future sex life, so I don't have to be that person and I don't have to do those things anymore. And so I say that prayer, God, mold my ideals and help me to live up to them. And then I get into that fourth column. What should I have done instead? And what I do is I end up flipping column two and column three. So if in column two or three, I'm selfish, dishonest, and considerate, what should I have done instead? I should be selfish. I should be honest. I should be considerate. If I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness, perhaps I should have built love, trust, connection, affection over time. Maybe that's something I should have done instead. I don't know about you, but I was a bit of a raging alcoholic in my relationships too. You know what I'm saying? Like I didn't stop being very alcoholic in my relationships. That continued on. So what do I need? I need to be sober. And I need to be fully engaged in all 12 steps as a way of life. Again, I'm sure you guys are well adjusted, but I'm codependent AF. So what do I need to do? I need to be God-dependent AF. That's what I got to do. And how do I get there, these steps? I don't know about you, but I have a hard time communicating. Especially when I'm afraid you're not going to like me. So communicating when it's hard. See, I have worked with a variety of human beings across the spectrum of humanity. And there are some things that I have found to be very consistent, regardless of any of their characteristics, their relationship status, anything like that. And those are some of them. That discernment, that kindness, that care, that reliance upon God. It becomes a part of almost everyone that I work with, their sex ideal. But just like I can't overcome self with self, just like I can't overcome alcoholism, just like I can't be free from resentments, and just like I can't overcome fear, I can't live up to ideals on my own power. That's not something I can do. I need God's help. I need God's help. And so what do I do with the sex ideal? It's not some, when I receive fifth steps from my sponsees, I'll write out what I hear them say their sex ideal is and I'll give it to them. It's not something to go on the shelf. It's not something to go on the wall. It's something that I take to prayer. I can take that sex ideal and I can turn those things as prayers. God, help me to seek my value, my worth, my self-esteem from you so I can channel it to those who need it most. Help me to be of love and service in all that I do. Help me to be honest and kind and loving when it's hard. Help me to build trust in all my relationships. That's what I can do. And then the sex ideal that goes from the stagnant, nebulous thing, like what the heck is one of those? It becomes a part of my working daily prayer life. And this is going to be a weird thing, but a sex ideal is a little like a resume. Bear with me with that. Do not give it to your partner. But what I mean by that is it's a living document, right? So it changes as I change. Because what am I inventorying, right? Because if I end a relationship, I get into a relationship, I'm struggling in my relationship, where should I come to these columns? And what I see is the difficulties where I'm struggling. And then I see what I should do instead, and I need God's help to live up to those. So it's going to change over time. And it's going to grow over time. And so I don't want it to be the stagnant over there thing. It's something I take into my prayer life. And one of the things is, and I just love, see, on page, we kind of avoid 69. We're like, well, this is a lot of, you know. That's verbatim. That's verbatim. I heard all the time, like, oh, you know. You can tell I've been talking for a while because my brain's like, we're going to stop with words. We're just going to make sounds now. Just sounds. Don't worry. I'll real quickly go over step 8 and 9. And it'll just be like, you know. That's how we're doing that. You got the information though, right? 8, 9. Oh, you got it? Okay, cool. Cool. Rock and roll. But at the bottom of page 69, it says, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask, that's another prayer. We ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. I will point out there's a lot of times I do not want the right answer, but it'll come if I want it. And that tells me how, as somebody who is living the spiritual way of life, how I approach all my problems. All my problems, I go through the process of inventory. All my problems, I make amends where I've done harm. All my problems, I take to prayer and to meditation. That's how we begin to live this way of life. And so it then goes on to talk about like, man, it's one of the few places in the book that's very clear. If I do not have a sex ideal, then I do not live up to it. I will drink again. It is not mincing words. It's very clear. And so this is an area of our life where it's like, it's not loosey-goosey. It's like really solid duck, you know? Like, I gotta do this thing. And I can't on my own. Again, it's a deeper surrender to God. So what I'm gonna do things a little out of order, but you'll see why here in a bit. I'm gonna pop over to 8 and 9. I haven't forgotten about, well, I'll do 5, I'll do 8 and 9. Haven't forgot about 6 and 7, but we're gonna do 6 and 7 together. We're gonna do an activity. I'm so sorry you came late for the activity portion of this. I am so sorry. Just trying to avoid activities, we're activitying. Woo! I'm so sorry. Does anyone have any questions about does anyone have any questions about sex? But I actually want to narrow that. Does anyone have any questions about the sex conduct inventory things that we just went over? Yeah.
When would it be appropriate for oneself to think, I need to put my spouse into this mix? How would one go about that?
Absolutely. So I'll just repeat it. Like, when would I put my spouse into this mix? And the simple answer is when I'm doing inventory, right? As soon as I come to inventory, I'm in a relationship. I want to inventory that relationship. The other answer of like, when should I, like, maybe I'm trucking along life and everything's going fine, but if we're finding we're having problems in a relationship, we're finding we're butting heads, we're finding we don't have that flow, we're finding we're full of fear, we're finding that it's just not working. What do I want to do? Well, I can't overcome self with self. I want to turn to this inventory process so I can get let God's light into the relationship. So when I'm struggling, this and like that's what I'm really been on about, which I'm sure is annoying. But that this inventory process, it's not something I do it for and I'm done. I use this inventory process when I go to my 10th step, which I don't think we'll get into because I don't think I manage my time very well. Title of my life. And I use it when I do my evening review. These 4 columns for resentments, these 4 columns for fears, and these 4 columns for my intimate or romantic relationships. And you know what I've done when I've had an area of my life where that has been difficult? I take it through those sex columns, and I come up with an ideal for that area of my life. See, I've come up with work ideals before. These are just columns to get me out of self and to see what I should do instead. And I can't, there's so much I can do on my own power, and this is it. But I can't, so many times, I can't be that person that I truly want to be. And this is how I let God work through me and take me there. Does that feel like that's it for sex? Sorry, that's a, oh, another question. I am phrasing this very awkwardly. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, no, delightful. No, that's, yeah.
Have we hurt?
Yeah.
I understand all that.
Yeah.
How do we write in, or we only write in about who we hurt, not who hurt us?
Yeah, we're not looking. Yeah, exactly. We're not looking at where we were sexually assaulted, abused as children. That is only in the resentment section. We're not doing that here. Here we're looking where we hurt others with our conduct.
So what if you have a huge jealousy issue? How are we at fault? Well, we were jealous.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If you find jealousy is a theme in your relationships, well, this inventory will help you illuminate that, right? Where were we at fault? I was driven by this jealousy and I fueled my insecurity. God, I ask that you mold my ideals and help me live up to them. What's the opposite of jealousy? Well, I'm gonna be rooted in God. My worth, my value, my esteem comes from God. I'm gonna grow in humility, that I'm no better than you, that I'm no worse than you. Right? And I'm reliant upon God, that I don't have that need for control, that I don't need to manage, right? That I can let you be you and let you have the dignity of your own experience. And what we see is a sex ideal. And I can take that to prayer. God, help me to be rooted and grounded in you. Help me to grow in humility. Help me to see that my worth and value is in you. Help me to let go of control. Help me to let those in my life have the dignity of their own experience. And I start praying that and I start living up to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cool. Rock and roll. Yeah. Yep.
So often the same name will appear under resentment as it appears under sex inventory.
Yep.
And then we're talking about where were we at fault, and sometimes that same thing will be like my mistake.
Yes.
So are they different things, or is it just like a deeper dive into it? Or?
It often just flows. And I'm going to spoil some for you. You know when we go to amends? You know, when we go to amends, you're like, maybe, are we going to get there? When we make amends with people, we also share what we did, being specific and focusing on our defects of character. You know where I get that? My 4th column of resentments. My 2nd column of sex. See, this work isn't wasted. This work flows. So a lot of times it'll just flow in. Of course, you'll have a more specific lens on it. But yeah, it flows. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cool. Cool. Rock and roll. All right. I don't have a non-awkward way of being like, hey, we good with sex? Do you want to move on? No response means yep, cool, all right. So the next chapter is into action. And what I want to point out, it is into action, not into thinking about it, not into feeling, not into learning, not into educating, but into action. What is called of me is action. And I'm gonna go quickly because we got the last hour and we're gonna try to get a whole lot done in this hour. Well, we'll do our best. You know what I mean? It'll be what it'll be. We let God write. We let God drive this bus, and this bus is going where it's going. It's not my 100 forms of fear, right? It'll just be what it'll be. So into action. So we now have this inventory. So what are we going to do with it? Well, I need to share with God and another human being. And it's going to tell us, why do I have, bottom of 72, why do I have to do a fifth step? Because this is one of those steps we don't want to do. This is one of those ones we sit on four because I don't want to do five. Why do I have to do it? What says the best reason first? If we skip this vital step, we might not overcome drinking. Why do I have to do this so I can stay sober? See, if I keep that stuff inside of me, I'm going to be blocked from the sunlight of the spirit. I'll be in that darkness and the insanity of alcohol return, and I'll drink again and I'll die. And then it talks about, so if you flip, I'm really going quickly. So if you flip the page, it's talking about who can I do my fifth step with? Now, the first person that I can do my fifth step with is my sponsor. And keep in mind, this book was published in the 1930s. I might only have a copy of this book. I might not have somebody that's taking me through the steps. So it's going to give me a list of people that I could possibly take a fifth step to. We could just do it with our sponsor. You know, that's probably easier. But another point, we've got a room full of people. I know there are people here that would be more than happy to receive a fifth step. More than happy to. So it doesn't have to be our sponsor. It also talks about we could go to a religious person. Often religious people understand what we're doing. What we're doing is trying to clear away the stuff inside of me that is blocking us off from God. That is what I'm trying to do. Often. So if I want to see a religious person, maybe somebody I'll never have to see again, I can do that. And then it tells us maybe it's our doctor or psychiatrist. Maybe not. Maybe that was okay in like 1939 when they didn't have a lot of options. But like, I don't know about you, but like, does your psychologist bill by the hour? How long was your last fifth step? You know what I'm saying? Also, I don't know what the doctors are like out here, but I'll tell you, isn't it 50 minutes in, 50 minutes out, you know? Yeah, it is. Cool. Maybe not cool. I don't know. But I don't really have, like, I won't be able to sit down. And the doctor's probably, my general practitioner is probably not so concerned about my spiritual condition. I mean, if I show up with a rash, might care about the rash, but what we're looking at is deeper. I don't know why I would bring up rashes. That's weird. the longer the day goes on, the more I get weird. All right. Sex inventory. Woo! Yeah, that's what happens. All right. And then it tells us, maybe it could be one of our own family, but we must not tell anything to our wives or parents, which would hurt them and make them unhappy. No. Just no. Just, dear God, no. Could you imagine? I mean, of course, it's telling don't take your sex inventory to your spouse, but like also like, no. No. We got a sponsor, right? And then it goes on to really talk about this rule, right? The rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. That does not mean me being mean to me and kicking the crap out of me. That means holding myself to a standard and being considerate of others. And then at the bottom of page 74, it's saying, hey, notwithstanding the great necessity for discussing ourselves with someone, it might be that no suitable person is available. No. I've got like, I'm 36 people, I can't count. 36 people who could listen to your fifth step right now, you know? There's no postponing. And so it says, we say this because we're very anxious that we talk to the right person. So much in this book, it tells me how to go and do, but not tell me how to receive. So how do I receive a fifth step? And if I turn this around, I can see who I need to be to receive that fifth step. We say this because we are very anxious that we talk to the right person. It is important that he be able to keep a confidence. Can I receive what has been shared with me, and can I keep it to myself? That he fully understand and approve of what we're driving at. What are we trying to do? We're trying to establish a relationship with God. That he will not try to change our plan. But we must not use this as a mere excuse to postpone. And what we're doing here, what I'm doing is I'm just becoming somebody to receive that fifth step. And when I'm sharing that fifth step, what I'm doing is I'm getting that darkness, those secrets out of the house. And when we talk about step five, we look at admitting, right? There's two ways to look at admitting. One is a bit of a confession, so that I need to confess that I peed on your carpet. Yeah, I gotta confess that thing about the linoleum, right? But another way to look at the word admit, if we had a ticket, right? Let's say we're gonna go to a hockey game. Let's say we're gonna go to a play or a concert. On that ticket, it would say admit one. So another way to look at that word admit is to be let in. So what I am trying to do is I'm trying to let in another human being, and I'm trying to let in God's light. That is what I'm trying to do. And then it tells us how we go and do a fifth step. And here's how we do it. It says we pocket our pride and go to it. That's how we do a fifth step. We sit down with somebody that we trust, usually our sponsor, and we share the contents of our inventory. That's what we do. And one of the things I do a number of things with sponsees when I receive their fifth steps. But one of the things I always start with is there anything that you don't want to tell me? Is there anything that you just, it's like burning a hole in your soul and you just want to tell me now? We rip off the band-aid, get it done. And then I always wrap up the fifth step and ask, is there anything else? Is there anything that you left off? And I want you to know, here's my experience. The stuff, those deep, dark secrets, those things that we want to go to the grave with, it's in the fifth step that I begin to feel a part of humanity. And truly, when I begin to receive the fifth steps of others, that I really begin to experience the unconditional nature of God's love. See, I'm just a drunk. I'm just a drunk in Calgary, Alberta. And I have received probably hundreds of fifth steps. There's probably not a thing that I have not heard or a thing that I do not know that somebody has not done. Yes, even that. And yes, even that. And yes, even that. You know, if you're thinking about the things that you've done, yes, the things that you've done, yes, I've heard that. And I want you to know, when I receive those secrets, those things, that shame, that thing that we want to die behind, that thing we want to kill ourselves behind, what I want you to know is how I feel about them changes, how I feel about my sponsees change. And I love them more. I love them more. I am a fall down failure of a human being. I am an alcoholic. I can't keep myself sober. I'm pissing my pants behind a dumpster. I'm ruining your carpet. I am a failure of a human being, and I love them more. And it always is a reminder for somebody like me, if that is how this little drunk can feel about another drunk, how might the unconditional love that is God feel about you? That's what's on offer here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Awakening to the unconditional nature that is God's love. And that's what 6 and 7 is all about. Now, I'm not going to focus on 6 and 7 because what we're going to do is we're going to do some work together today. And we're going to have a 6 and 7 experience together. And in that experience, we're going to see. But just really, really quickly, what I want to do is I want to explain how I make an amends. And it's completely out of order, but I'm just aware of the time. And so we're going to do that. And so I'm just going to take it from my little handout sheet, which does come from the book, but you'll have to trust me. The first thing I want to do, don't trust me. Go have an experience with the book. Go find it in the book. Yeah. Don't believe me. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, focus. And so what I want to do is in my ninth step, I want to reach out to that person and I want to explain what I'm doing. And it can look a number of different things and you can do it a number of different ways. And that first approach is however I get a hold of them, you know, finding them on Facebook, reaching out to them on Instagram, getting a number. If I have to send a letter because I don't have any other way of getting a hold of them, I get a hold of them. And what I do is I explain why am I here? What am I trying to do? And I can say something like, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and part of the process of these 12 steps asked me to reflect upon my life. And in so doing, I saw that I caused you harm. It's important for me to make that right. You don't have to tell them you're an Alcoholics Anonymous. You can just say, I've been looking at my life and I've been reflecting upon our relationship and I see that I caused you harm. And I want to make that right. And that's what we're doing. See, we were talking in the break that like, I don't know if I can make an amends. I've said sorry. An amend is not a sorry. The word amend means to change and to repair. And that's what I'm going out to the world to do. I'm going out to the world to change, to repair, to restore the harms that I've caused, to make restitution. And then what I do in the amends process and when I'm sitting with them is I want to focus on what I did, the harms that I caused, being very specific when applicable, focusing on my defects of character. When I did this, it was selfish. When I stole your car, that was selfish and dishonest and inconsiderate of me. When I slept with your husband, I'm using the example that I've been using the whole study, so just for those that came in late, when I slept with your husband, I destroyed the trust that you had in your relationship. And that was incredibly wrong of me. See, I might want to say sorry, but that was wrong. I was wrong. That carries more weight because we've said sorry. I was selfish. I was self-centered and I was self-seeking and I did not consider how that would affect you. When I peed on your carpet and said it was linoleum, I was dishonest. Right? I want to tie it back to my defects of character. And then one of the things I want to do is I want to ask, is there any other way in which I've caused you harm? And I can say it, you know what, it was not my intention to leave anything out. But I just want to ask, is there any other way that I've caused you harm? And the biggest thing about that is to listen. Whatever they say is true. It is true. And if I'm struggling with understanding what my defects of character are, they will tell me. And this is where I get a lens into where my selfishness and self-centeredness harm others. And then what I do is I ask, what can I do to make it right? And then I do that. And in the book on step 9, it talks about in 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. You know what's unexpected? That it goes well. In 9 cases out of 10, it's like, no, just keep doing what you're doing. And I don't know about you, when I heard that, I'm like, give me amends. Woo, I don't got to do anything. Pew, pew, amends, made, done. Woo, yeah. No. If I was asked to keep doing what I'm doing, what I need to do is to continue to live this way of life. I need to continue to take inventory. I need to continue to pray on a daily basis. I need to continue to meditate on a daily basis. I need to continue to do my evening review. I'm talking about it now because I might not have time before we wrap up this thing at 4. I need to continue to work with others. I need to continue. That is what is asked of me. And so what we're going to do, oh, the paper and stuff. I did not plan anything. I'm going to need some vision for you people to help me out. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have somebody who is able-bodied and is a home group member to grab some paper and some pens. See, Alcoholics Anonymous is not about me listening. It's about me doing. The chapter is into action. So thank you guys. And you don't have to. Like I said, there's no participation required. But what I'd like us to do is to take 15 minutes. 15 minutes, does that sound fair? And what we're gonna do is we're gonna write out either a resentment or a fear or a sex conduct or an amends. Just take 15, and you can draw a picture of a cat. Like, I'm not grading this. I'm not telling you what you have to do. But this is experiential. So what I would like us to do is take 15 minutes to do that. How's that sound? Not a resounding success. But why don't we do that? And let's have an experience with it together. How's that sound?
So what are we supposed to do?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So what we're gonna, so we have the printouts. What I would like us to do, and you don't have to, no one's gonna force you, no one's gonna grade it. But if you have, no, you're fine.
I'm like standing in the way.
No, that's great. If you have a resentment, it's okay. If you have a resentment, take it through the resentment columns. Just try it. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be thorough. Just try it. If you don't want to do resentment, don't do resentment. If you have a fear, take it through the fear columns. Just try it. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just try it. If you have a relationship issue, take it through the sex columns. Doesn't have to be perfect. Just try it. Let's do 15 minutes. If you are lemon squeezy on all of that, you're kicking butt, taking inventory, and making amends. Well, write out an amends. Let's take 15 minutes and just do that. It doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to read it to anyone. You don't have to take it to anyone. But let's have an experience with this inventory process. And then what we're going to do is when we're going to do that, we're going to do a little exercise in 6 and 7. We're just going to have an experience with 6 and 7. And I'll talk about it then. So let's sit quietly and write some inventory. Woo! Yeah! 15 minutes. Okay, so the next thing that we're going to do, and what we're going to do is we're going to talk about 67. 6 and 7. Sorry, my brain is like page 67. My brain's almost done. But we're almost done too, so don't you worry, we're wrapping up shortly. So when whatever we wrote, whether it was resentments, whether it was fear, whether we wrote out a sex conduct or we wrote out an amends, what we saw are some defects of character. And what I would like you to do is just grab another page, another piece of paper, and just write what you saw your defects of character were. Now, if you're like, girl, I don't see anything. Okay, but what I want you to know is each and every one of my defects of character can either fit into the category of selfishness or self-centeredness. Because selfishness is how I act in the world, and self-centeredness is how I think and perceive the world. So when I pee on your carpet, sleep with your husband, and steal your car, that is selfish, yeah? When I'm worried you don't like me because I did those things, that's self-centered. Does that make sense? So what we want... Absolutely. So selfish is how I act in the world. And self-centeredness is how I think or perceive. Right? I'm selfish when I take things from you. I'm selfish when I don't show up when I said I would. And I'm self-centered when I come to a room and I think nobody likes me. Or you know when there's those people in the corner and they're talking and then I come in and they stop talking and it's like they were talking about me? I mean, I know you guys don't relate, but that's an example of self-centered. When I take things that aren't about me and I make them about me, I'm centered upon self. Another example of self-centered is self-pity. When I'm sitting at home thinking about what a piece of garbage I am, what a piece of loser I am, what a big giant loser I am, that is self-centered. Does that make sense? All right. Do we have those defects written down? All right. So what we're going to do, so we're going to try to use some self-will on that piece of paper. So I want you to grab that piece of paper and I want you to scrunch it up. And I want you to like just squeeze the heck out of that piece of paper with your defects of character. Just squeeze self-will, 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 self-will. Let's go. Let's give it a squeeze. Heck, if we weren't worried about cleaning up, you could tear it up. Like just hold. If you guys could open your hands, is the defect still there?
Yeah,
oh, that didn't do anything, did it?
No.
Okay, now I'm not going to take us through the step of self-knowledge, because the other step we could take is self-knowledge, is where you go and you Google all those defects of character and what they mean and the etymology of the language of the defect of character, and you see the opposite, and we could do all that. But it's still there, right? So what we're going to do is experience the power that is 6 and 7. And so I'm going to need some vision for you help. I'm going to need some vision for you members to come up and grab garbage bags. I know, it's an activity. It's a metaphor. And what I want you to do is on a separate piece of paper, I want you to write that you didn't squish up. What I want you to write is a name for the God of your understanding on that piece of paper. Whatever word you use for God, I want you to write on that piece of paper. And then what we're going to do is we're going to come to the spiritual garbage bag. You remember on Thursday I was talking about how it's a spiritual garbage bin. So we got a couple. So it's like it's time of fishing. And what we're going to do is we're going to hand that piece of paper that says the name of the God of our understanding to our super helpful volunteers. And they're going to hold that name of God. And what we're going to do is we're not going to Kobe our defects. We're not going to try to get a three-pointer. We're not going to like deke about and do that, right? We're not going to squish them real tight. That didn't work. What we're simply going to do is we're going to hold our hand over that garbage bag. And instead of dropping it, instead of letting go, all we're going to do is we're going to reach and grab for the name of the God of our understanding. And we're going to watch what happens. And I just ask that when you do it slowly and presently and mindfully. Does that make sense? No, not at all. Not at all. Can you grab me a piece of paper? All right. Yeah, and then I want you to hold those pieces of paper.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so imagine that piece of paper has the name of God on it. And see, I've scrunched up this piece of paper. I self will. So what I'm not going to Kobe it. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to reach for that piece of paper. And that's what 6 and 7 is all about. It's all about reaching for God's will. And as I reach for God's will, the defect falls. See, I don't know about you, but every single defect of character I have ever had, I did not kick its butt. I did not win. I did not defeat it. I did not overcome my procrastination later. You know what I mean? What I did was I sought the will of God. And in so doing, that defect falls. And this is just a very, it's kind of for the, do we have any tactile learners? Yeah, tactile learners, woo! So this is some for the tactile learners. Just to presently and mindfully just reach for that power which is God and watch the defect fall. Does that make sense now? Are you guys cool? Come up and do that, like one at a time, like together. It's not one person and we're all watch. It's like, let's just come up and do that. Okay, so we did a little bit of tactile learning, and here's the thing. I'm just real aware that we're not going to get through, at 11. So just real quickly, what I want to do is I want to share my experience with step 12, because that's the deal here. See, sponsorship, I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think sponsorship is for the keeners that like the highlighters, me. I think it's top-tier AA. I think it's extra special AA, but for sobriety, it is a minimum requirement. See, on page 20 of our book, it says, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we might help meet their needs. My life is dependent upon me thinking of how I might help you. And we have a whole chapter that is dedicated to how we can work with others. It's conveniently titled Working with Others, so that we can find it. And I want you, and like throughout this book, we're speaking about the promises. I want to read to you some of the promises that happen in step 12. When I'm actively living this way of life, when I'm actively working with others. Chapter 7, page 89, it says practical experience. Again, this is not an intellectual living in the ivory tower. This is our practical experience. This is what we have found that works. Shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking. Immunity, that's what I needed when I got here. Immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. I tell my sponsees regularly, if it's not inconvenient, I probably don't have enough sponsees, right? It's meant to be intensive. It meant to work with others. It's meant to be an inconvenience. And it says it works when other activities fail. Working with others, carrying this message works when nothing else works. This is our 12th suggestion. Now, keep in mind, I want to point out, we don't have alternative suggestions. If you're like, hold on a minute, where's the diet AA? Where's the AA lemon lime or something? Keep in mind, on page 25, we saw that we have two alternatives. I don't have another option. My other option is an alcoholic death, right? It says carry, but one of the themes was like, don't tell me what to do, I'm gonna do the opposite. So we phrase it as a suggestion because that's how our little brains work. It says carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. The worst things about myself, the worst things I did, the depth of my shame, the depth of my alcoholic depravity, I can help others with that when no one else can. Not the smartest, not the most educated, not the best of the best. I can help this little drunk who couldn't stop pissing her pants behind a dumpster. I can help. I can help. You can help. It says, you can secure their confidence when others fail. Now, it goes on in the chapter, Working with Others, how do I secure their confidence? Well, I share from my own experience. I share from my own experience my example with the allergy. I share from my own experience what happens when I take a drink and that drink takes me and off I go and I can't control the amount that I take. I share from my own experience those times when I've come to and I've said, that's it, I'm never going to drink again, and I meant it. With everything that I was and everything that I had, I meant it and I drank again, I share that. I share my examples of the cycle, those times I said I was never going to drink again, I was thrust into sobriety and I had that thought and off I went. I share that. The worst things about me are transformed into my principal asset. That is how I secure their confidence. And it says, remember they are very ill. One of the things when we're talking about the allergies, right? When we're at the start of this deal, we're talking about the physical allergy. Does anyone here have any other allergy other than alcohol? Does anyone, what are you allergic to?
I'm the resident anaphylaxis meat guy over here.
Okay, anaphylaxis. Oh, you did not have the pizza, did you?
Isn't it ironic that weed isn't half of the shit we drink?
Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah. Now, so our anaphylaxis wheat guy, I want to point out, you're not allergic to wheat because of your weak moral character. You're not allergic to wheat because of generational sin. You are not a bad person, and that does not create your wheat intolerance. It's just like that with alcohol. I am not a bad person because I am an alcoholic. And when I sit down with others, and man, let's be honest, we can be incredibly difficult people. We're selfish, we're self-centered. And it says an alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. We are difficult, but we are very ill. And when I approach another alcoholic, to remember to always approach with compassion, understanding, and kindness, and this solution, armed with these facts, because man, that is what we have on offer, a way out and a way of life. It says life will take on new meaning. I don't know about you. When I got here, I was living in those bedevilments on page 52. I felt like a loser. I had nothing. My life was meaningless. I couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Life takes on new meaning. New meaning. To watch other people recover. To see them help others. To watch loneliness vanish. I mean, that's to be a small part of the miracle in the lives of somebody else. To watch them begin to carry this message to others and them carry this message to others. To see that light come on in their eyes. To see that family come back. To become that person. To watch somebody become that person that they always truly wanted to be and never could. And to be a small part of the miracle in the lives of others. Man, that's the best. That is the best buzz I've ever had. You know, I joke with some sponsees, that's the God dope. That's what we're after. And it is incredible. But just like everything else in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't believe it until we experience it. It is not educational, it is experiential. I've got to work with others to see it. And I've got to work with others to do it. And we talk about watching loneliness vanish. I have this, I'm sure you'll be surprised that sometimes when I do talks, I bounce around the big book a whole lot. Like all over the place. I have this one talk about how I focus on loneliness and the theme of loneliness throughout the book. And see, I talk about how loneliness has nothing to do with separation from human beings. I don't know about you, but I felt lonely in a stadium full of people. I felt absolutely alone in a room full of others. I felt alone in a room full of drunks. I don't know about you, but I felt absolutely alone in the middle of a relationship. And I felt alone in the middle of an act of intimacy. Felt absolutely alone. Loneliness has absolutely nothing to do with separation from you. It has everything to do with separation from God. And see, in the step five promises, I didn't read them, but they're good, right? In the step five promises, I begin to be able to be alone at perfect peace and ease. It has nothing to do with proximity to you and I. Everything to do with that connection with a power greater than myself. And the most incredible thing, that loneliness vanishes within myself and I get to be a small part of that spiritual awakening in the lives of others. And it talks about to see a fellowship grow up about you. And that is incredible. See, I mean, we talk of, there's two fellowships. There's the fellowship and the only requirement for membership is that I have a problem with alcohol and a desire to stop drinking. That's the only requirement. Unfortunately, for an alcoholic of my type, there's a different requirement for sobriety. My requirement for sobriety, and there's no judgment if you don't want to do these steps. I get it. Like, I draw your cat pictures. Don't do the inventory thing that we were doing. You know what I mean? Like, I get it, right? But that fellowship of the Spirit. To be awakened, to be on fire, to be lit up by this thing. That fellowship that happens when we work with others and when they work with others. Like, that is incredible. It's incredible. And man, if you don't believe me, do it. Like, don't, like, literally, this whole thing is like, don't trust me, go do it. Go prove me wrong. Prove me wrong and have this miracle in your own life. So it says, we know you will not, this, and it says to have a host of friends. I didn't have friends, right? I felt so alone. But I can fly into another province with, you know, and to be fair, I do have a lot of friends in Cambridge. I love you guys. But to meet people that I've never met before, to see people I've never met, to introduce ourselves and to have a quick friendship. a quick understanding. And it's not just our common problem, but our common solution. And that common program of action to take me from that place of hopelessness to that place of hope. There is an understanding that we have. And it says, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. If you would have told me that hanging out in a church in Ontario would be the bright spot of my life, I would not have believed you. But I guarantee this is the bright spot of my life. And those promises are powerful. My home group, we read them at the end of every meeting. And they're good. But those aren't the only promises in step 12. What I want to do is I want to turn to page 100. Where it says, both you and the new man, both you and the sponsee must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. Again, it is not progress, not perfection. It is spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And it says, if you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have imagined, were better than anything we could have planned. Anyone ever been told you're a handful? Maybe it's because I was in the wrong hands. Maybe perhaps it was in God's hands I needed to be. How do I put myself in God's hands? I work these 12 steps, all of them, as a way of life like my life depends on it. I go from that place of hopelessness to that place of hope. And when I do that, the things that happen to me are better than anything I could have imagined. And this is where two polar opposites can be true. Life can happen. You can end up in a wheelchair at 18 months sober. You can go through death and pain and suffering and a life beyond our wildest dreams. Where both those two things happen. They are not polar opposites. See, what I have found is the God of Alcoholics Anonymous is not a God of or. It is a God of and. And there is pain, and there is suffering, and there is joy, and I can use that pain and suffering that I went through to help others. And it says, follow the dictates. We don't like dictates. It sounds like rules. We're not a fan of those. But follow the directions. Follow the directions. What are the directions? These 12 steps taken out of this book. And it says, of a capital H, capital P, higher power, and you will live, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. See, my sobriety is not contingent upon anything out here. Just like that is not where my alcoholism lives. My sobriety is contingent upon in here, my relationship with God. And life will happen. But as a result of doing this work and living this way of life, We can sail through this thing. I just want to pop it back over to there is a solution just real quick. See, on page 18, it says, but the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, this spiritual awakening, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. It does not take long to get well. It does not take long to go for a... Heck, we did some inventory in 15 minutes. It doesn't take long. It does not take long to have an experience. And it says, until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. And this is the requirements for me as a sponsor. This is how I meant to show up in working with others. You'll notice we're not in the chapter working with others. We're in chapter step one. There is a solution. From the very beginning of this book, it tells me I need to work with others. It tells me working with others is not optional. It is a requirement for sobriety. And it says that the man who is making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows what he is talking about, that his whole deportment shouts. And I love that. Because my job isn't to shout at you. Now, my voice is a little hoarse because I've been talking a while. But my job is not to shout at you. My job is to live this life, to take these actions of these 12 steps, and to do this rigorously and thoroughly, to continue this way of life. So how I live, that light shines out through me, and you cannot deny the change that has happened to me. I'm not here to shout to tell you what to do. I'm here to let my deportment shout. I love that idea. My job is to be the lighthouse, to shine so bright with this power, which I didn't believe in and I didn't like when I got here, to shine so bright with that power, you cannot deny that change and you can find the way to safe harbor. That is my job. And to do that, I have to continue to keep that house clean. And that it says that he has no that he is no, deportment shouts at the new prospect that he is a man with a real answer, that he has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except his sincere desire to be helpful. There are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures, although hopefully this didn't feel like a lecture, to be endured. These are the conditions we have found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. The people who are least likely to be healed become healed. And that is my responsibility. See, I truly believe that sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous is a gift. Now, if we have some big book nerds here in the audience, you'd be like, excuse me, it says that a price had to be paid. Yeah, that meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all. Sobriety is a gift. See, the price that I'm paying to receive the gift is giving away that garbage that we were throwing away that we did not want in the first place. Destroying self-centeredness never feels good when I'm about to do it, but there is only freedom after. And I will end, because I figure you guys want to have some wrapping up comments, so I will end on this. Might lie again. But I truly believe that Alcoholics Anonymous and sobriety, and deeper than that, emotional sobriety, the spiritual awakening that's on offer is a gift. And it's a lot like waking up on Christmas morning. You know, when you're a kid and you woke up on Christmas morning, and down those stairs under that tree, there was a gift, and it had your name on it, and it was wrapped beautifully. It had the most perfect, beautiful, vibrant bow. The tree is decorated. Again, there is that name tag, and it has your name on it. And what do I need to do? See, I don't work these steps to become worthy of this gift. I don't work these steps to earn this gift. I'm a big believer. I don't deserve this. I didn't earn it. I am not worthy of it any more than anyone that is in here, or any less than anyone that is dying from this illness. I don't deserve it. I didn't earn it. But I do have to put myself in a position to receive the gift. And again, I don't climb that ladder of success. I surrender myself down those stairs to the unconditional love that is God to receive that gift. And I want you to know, if you've not had that gift, if you've not experienced that gift, or that gift feels like a faraway thing, our life depends on helping you. So please, let us help you find it. Thank you for the opportunity to be of service.